My task here is to provide very broad strokes about what the United States has been doing in Afghanistan for the last 10 years. And I wanted to begin by giving you just a few numbers to ponder. So the first is, of course, 10 years. This is the longest military engagement the United States has ever been involved in. The official estimate of the cost is $500 billion so far. However, there's a project at the Watson Institute in Security Studies at Brown University that's trying to gauge the full economic and human costs of war, and their estimate is that it's actually between $3 and $4 trillion. 236,000 people have now been killed, and half of the American public says the war has not affected them or changed their lives in any way. 15% of people surveyed say that they follow news about Afghanistan. Right, so into that breach, I wanted to talk a little bit more. In the last week, there, as part of the 10-year commemoration or anniversary of the war, Pew Charitable Trust has done a survey about where the American public stands, where members of the military stand in terms of the different wars, and 52% of the general American population says that the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have not been worth it. Very interesting from my perspective is also they interviewed veterans. And in interviewing veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, only 34% of them think that these wars have been worth fighting, which is remarkably, remarkably low. Just think about if you had given up that many years of your life and put yourself under that kind of risk, put that your families under that kind of stress, to have only 1 out of 3 returning veterans say that it was that the wars are worth fighting is remarkable. And also very interesting is that 51% of veterans say that fighting terrorism with military force leads to more terrorism. So I wanted to put that out there. So a brief history of what the United States has done in Afghanistan, right? So we all know that it began 10 years ago, right after 9/11. When all of a sudden the United States government identified the fact that the Afghanistan was being ruled by the Taliban was a threat to the United States. One, because that meant that they were harboring terrorist number one, enemy number one, Osama bin Laden, but also because they were a regime that abused the human rights of women. It's very interesting. Laura Bush actually had a Thanksgiving Day address in November 2001 where she went on the radio and asked women in the United States to back the military engagement in the name of saving the rights of women around the world. That was what the United States was doing there. So the war appeared to be quickly won, in that the Taliban was deposed rather rapidly, although, of course, Osama bin Laden was not found. There wasn't a large troop presence. In April 2003, NATO took over command of the international effort in Afghanistan. In October 2004, after a period of reconstruction and rewriting the Afghani constitution, Hamid Karzai was elected president, and troop levels slowly started escalating from 15,000 to about 32,000 soldiers until 2008, when all of a sudden there was a large uptick in casualties in Afghanistan. And You can chart the growth together. Casualties rose at the same time that the troop deployment started to raise. And this is, of course, when President Obama was elected. And we had about a year of contemplation about what we were doing in Afghanistan, and Obama, in quite dramatic fashion, announced that at the end of November in 2009, he was going to announce a new strategy in Afghanistan. He was going to decide whether it was worth staying or whether he wanted to pull out, or you know, he was going to talk to the military commanders and get advice from the State Department and figure out what the future Afghani policy was going to be. So at this point in 2009, the end of 2009, 50% of Americans thought that we should stay until Afghanistan had remained stable. And 42% thought that we needed to have an immediate withdrawal, that we weren't going to be able to have any sort of productive impact in the country. And it's in that, you know, public arena, I think it's important to keep that in mind, that Obama rolled out a policy for Afghanistan where he argued that Afghanistan is a threat not just because we had not found Osama bin Laden at that point, but also because it was a weak state. Now, initially, we invaded Afghanistan because it had a hostile state. It had the Taliban, who was in charge of its government at that time, and we deposed that government. Now we had a friendly government, or a government that was presumably friendly with the United States. However, it was still considered a security threat because it was so weak. It was the lack of government, the lack of a strong government in Afghanistan that led the United States to conclude that, in some sense, it creates a regulatory black hole. If you don't have a government that can enforce the rule of law, then you can't, that government can't in turn turn over suspected terrorists to you or enforce other kinds of regulations that the international legal community would like to see, right? And so you saw a shift that it's not that we have a hostile government in place, it's that we have a poor, dysfunctional government in place, right? And that becomes important, particularly in combination with the fact that also Afghanistan is at this point labeled what's called a narco state, a state that is organized around and its politics and economics are in some sense organized by and driven by the production of opium. 90% of the world's opium supply comes from Afghanistan. Now you take that in combination with a weak state, and what that means is you have terrorists that are being poorly monitored, if monitored at all, by a weak government who have access to lots and lots of cash. And that, in combination, meant that the United States did not want to pull out of Afghanistan. However, they did not want to continue on in the same way. Instead, what they rolled out was that they were going to have a new counterinsurgency strategy in Afghanistan, when before they had been primarily pursuing what is known as counterterrorism. Right. So both of these things had been happening, but in some sense there was a public relations shift when all of a sudden counterinsurgency became the real focus of the mission in the United States. Now, what is counterinsurgency? I'm wondering, how many of you have heard of this term? Okay. Right. So for those of you who have not, let me just say briefly, right, that the idea behind counterinsurgency is a little bit different than the practice, but we'll put that to the side for now, right? The idea of counterinsurgency is that you can use civilian forces in combination with the military in order to stabilize a regime and, in some sense, well, they argue, you build up national capacity, you build civil society, and you use the soldiers in combination with the civilians, right? It's supposed to be an ideal counterinsurgency strategy is 80% civilian operations accompanied by 20% military operations. So the idea is that we were going to send more Marines over to Afghanistan in order to, quote unquote, win the hearts and minds of the Afghani population. The idea is that you do community outreach and you teach, you convince the population that their future lies in affiliating with you, your government, your troops, and your allies on the ground, as opposed to the insurgency. One of the difficulties with counterinsurgency strategy is, of course, it's hard to win over the hearts and minds of someone and convince them that you're there as their friend if you're standing there with a gun and, right, someone has bombed your village the previous week, right? So there's that really basic difficulty. But what the military argued at the time and what President Obama argued at the time is that it's a much more personnel-intensive military strategy. And that though we had wanted to pursue more of a counterinsurgency strategy in Afghanistan, we didn't have enough troops on the ground in order to do it. And so in December 2009, Obama announced that he was going to send in 30,000 additional troops in order to more effectively pursue the counterinsurgency strategy. And so from a troop deployment level that had hovered around between 30 and 35,000 troops, we saw it jump up in the next year and a half to 120,000 troops in Afghanistan in order to pursue this new counterinsurgency strategy. I think it was 8 months later, the general who'd been in charge of implementing the counterinsurgency strategy, Stanley McChrystal, gave an interview to Rolling Stone magazine mocking the counterinsurgency strategy. This would be kind of equivalent to like your star football player going to Sports Illustrated and mocking the coach of the team, right? And so McChrystal was fired. He was removed from his post in Afghanistan. And what you saw at the same time was the United States started backing away from the counterinsurgency strategy because it was unclear whether it was succeeding. Instead, you saw a resurrection of the counter-terrorist approach, which is, let's find the bad guys and kill them. That's counter-terrorism in a nutshell. Counter-insurgency is, let's win over the hearts and minds of the population. Counter-terrorism is, we'll find the bad guys and take them out. And this is also, 2010 is when you see a dramatic upsurge in the number of drone attacks that are happening in Pakistan and also Afghanistan. And so the plan is that by the end of 2012, we will have reduced troop levels back down to where they were before the surge, around between 30 and 40,000 troops, and that we're moving to more targeted assassination methods where we have drones and occasionally the Navy SEAL team who's gonna swing in. The fact that Osama bin Laden was caught through an operation like that, I think, really gave the military a visible victory that they'd been lacking in Afghanistan for a long time. And it's also provided the impetus and the rationale behind moving towards a counter-terrorist strategy. One last thing I want to leave you with before turning this over to Matt is in the same poll that came out last week, while 52% of Americans do not support the war in Afghanistan, 68% of Americans like the deployment and use of drones. Right. So one of the things that I think we need to look for in Afghanistan is we may be having some kind of visible drawdown from the war. Rhetorically, we may say that the war is over. But as people who are really interested in peace in Afghanistan, I think we need to watch what the United States government and the military is doing with drones, and if they are moving towards substituting drones for an active, sustained engagement.